All right, here we go. This is Araya Fine, podcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, with my guest today, Nate Manane.
Thank you, good to be here.
Yeah, he's in the studio today from Las Vegas, sitting in the speakerphone of my cell phone right next to me. And we just finished a rough draft, and we're going for the
here?
What? Nate, can you hear me?
No. Yeah, roger that.
All right. So we're going for the final draft here of a conversation related to a topic that kind of got started on some of our Zanga posts, kind of our online blogs. And the conversation was mostly about simple living and considering the thought of living at the poverty line. It's evoked a little bit of discussion and thoughts and comments from other people. And so I figured that when I talk with Nate about it, we figured we'd record the conversation for everybody to join in on. So without further ado, I think we'll start with Nate because he was the one who brought up the topic. Just a little bit of sort of your reasoning behind why you wanted to begin thinking about this and stuff maybe that you haven't talked about previously on your Zanga and stuff.
Yeah. Well, there was a group of people at Wheaton last semester talking about finances, talking about what it meant to be a good steward with our money, to live responsibly, simple living, things like that. And one of the things that actually you had challenged us with was living at the poverty line, and saying if we're serious about this and just about really like caring for the poor and understanding the poor, like maybe this is something that we want to do. And I've just been thinking about it since then, and maybe it's just a little bit of the anthropology coming through, but the idea of actually trying to do that to then understand what it's like to be poor and to relate in ways that I guess a discussion never could. All that goes along with that. You know, I like what Logan said about, like, you know, you're never going to fully relate to being poor because, like, at the end of the day, I am making almost $30,000 a year as a teacher. And, like, I have those social contacts that can help me and things like that. But at the same time, like, even the attempt to try to live simply, you know, not simply, but just to live in poverty, there's a lot that can be taken out of that. But anyways, well, I know you had kind of actually a different take on it, but what was your thoughts?
Yeah, that was that. Just the conversation that it evoked, some of the comments that you got after bringing it up was really interesting to me because it sort of brought up a different side of it that I really had never intended when I first started or mentioned it. You know, my idea wasn't necessarily focused on the element of relating to being poor and relating to poverty, but was more taking a figure which I didn't consider, others kind of considered the figure of the poverty line as an arbitrary number, but I saw it as a very clear-cut, sort of political, but sort of like on a social and societal level. This was a number that our federal government has decided is where poverty begins. So the number, like we said, or you had posted, the 2005 poverty line for a single person is $9,570 for a year. What that means is that $9,571 is not poor. $9,569, that's poor. And this is like, you know, a line that dictates whether, you know, as far as federal government goes and what kind of resources are available to us, this is the number
that you qualify for.
Yeah, yeah, this decides what you qualify for. And in other words, probably what would have been better as far as clarity goes for even just this whole topic was for me to say considering living at a dollar above the poverty line, you know, not considering necessarily living in poverty, but living at a place that is just above what poverty is. And what you came to find out kind of when you kind of added up your costs was that you didn't think it was possible for you as a single person to meet. I mean, maybe it's possible, but just to meet your basic needs, it didn't seem like it was feasible to live at that number, correct?
Like, okay. I just don't know how I could have done it.
Okay, exactly. And that's something that I think even Mindy and I have realized with our own costs. And this isn't even going into adding the student loans, loan payments and stuff. If I added that, you know, there's no way we'd be able to do it without,
right, then we calculated that in. There's just no possible way.
Yeah, yeah. And then, and so given all of that, there's this idea that, you know, look, if this is the number that we as a society and me as a citizen kind of, you know, if I don't say something about it, you know, I have a part in this. And almost my intention was almost to help us to see either A, you know, it is possible and we should be living at that level, or B, you know, it's not, you know, it's ridiculous to think that somebody can live on that amount, and that we should be joining in some political or at least vocal avenue to say, you know, we need to meet the needs of people that are above this number. We need to, you know, there's living wage campaigns, there's there's a lot of different organizations that are out to say, you know, look, the minimum wage and the poverty line are too small, and if we're going to consider ourselves, you know, a decent country, we need to care for those people in need, and that's more than the poverty line actually says. And so that was always my intention. I never meant it when I first kind of brought it up, at least not first and foremost, as something that builds the solidarity with the poor. It wasn't meant to be sort of a vow of poverty kind of a thing. It did come from the idea that, like, you know, we should be living simply, and we should be living on, you know, a small amount and making sacrifices and stuff, and to that degree. But the number, the reason the poverty line thing got brought up, was more of an intention on, I guess, a political level to say, you know, like, look, if this is, you know, this is what we say is, you know, above poverty, then let's, you know, let's live at that, you know, like, kind of put your money where your mouth is, almost, sort of a thing, you know.
Right. And, like, are we really okay with this?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Okay.
And then,
okay.
Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, you know, like, I feel like maybe unspoken in what I described a little bit ago was, like, the call to action after that experience, but I like how you put it.
Cool. Something else that got brought up sort of in comments that were addressed about what you had written was this idea that the other values that we have as Christians, like sustainability, things like supporting local produce and buying cars that are good for them, you know, are not harmful to the environment, hybrid cars, those sorts of things. Those sorts of things got brought up, and it was interesting because because I was realizing Mindy and I were just part of a CSA, it's Community Supported Agriculture, where we bought shares from local farmers in the Tennessee area. And based on that price, I felt like we could still live within a budget that would be, you know, maybe within the lines of this kind of poverty line thing we're talking about, or even at least close to it. You know, it didn't necessarily cost tons more to buy local produce. And now that might not be the same everywhere, especially when you start talking about places like Whole Foods and other places that are the more organic type things. You're not going to find a cheaper price tag. But I wouldn't be so quick. I wouldn't be so quick to say that buying locally and doing sustainable things are outside of the dollar amount in the sort of the simple, not simple living, but like sacrificial as far as the dollar amount type living goes. I think there can be a balance between the two.
Well, especially if we say that poverty is something we're targeting, now that I think about it, because, like, it really got me thinking, and, like, definitely, you know, like, we say we're targeting poverty, but, like, does that mean I do shop at Walmart? Because Walmart's cheap, but at the same time, like, look at what Walmart is doing, and, like, by me spending a little more, like, I personally may be spending a little bit more money, but it's not out of an attempt to live in luxury, but an attempt to prevent I guess systems that are keeping poverty in place, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, I mean, and this is the thing that comes up with when you talk about things like Walmart and stuff, is that I know that there's people who actually fall under the poverty line that they see as one of their only choices. I mean, they shop at Walmart on principle that every dollar, every penny counts, and to that degree, I'm not going to try to argue with that person about the harm that Walmart does, but for me, that's one of the things that my choice to live kind of sacrificially and be a good steward of my money is a choice that I make because I value caring for the poor and trying to meet those needs. And it seems that's the balance, is that, you know, you don't want to get so caught up in that you're supporting companies that are, you know, that are causing the poverty and not paying the living wages and benefits and all those kind of things. And so without getting into further details about Walmart in particular, just being aware that, like, you know, in every choice that we make, like, you know, companies there's lots of companies and lots of things that we make in all the choices in the purchasing decisions that we make, even on a small budget, that either supports the kind of things that that we would support as Christians or supports things that we wouldn't support as Christians. And that's an important decision to be making.
Right, and like I think the bigger question you asked a little bit ago, and I don't remember if it was in this conversation or a different one, but just like, what is the goal of us as Christians as we spend our money? Is it only just to save money so we can have that extra bit to give, or is it also to affect, you know, systemic change and things like that? So
yeah, absolutely.
I really appreciate that, and that got me thinking a lot.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, there's no, you know, there's no easy answers for a lot of this stuff, and you know, it's. I'd like to say, you know, like, hey, I figured it out, you know, and be able to write a book or spread the news. But I think there is, it's difficult to find the balance between all those things, you know. So, yeah, so those are some initial thoughts, I think, on the whole journey. There's plenty of tangents we can take on this, and maybe we'll do it again if people enjoy it. Any other final thoughts?
That would be wonderful.
Any final thoughts, Nate?
No. No.
Okay. I would enjoy.
Oh, actually, I do.
Oh, go for it. Go.
Yeah. Just to anyone who's listening to this, either you've graduated or probably about to graduate soon. There's plenty of housing in Vegas, and it's pretty low cost of living. So it's a good start. Even though I said in my Zanga that it's difficult to do that, I was lying. So you should move out of here quickly.
Yeah.
And have a good time with me.
Yeah, the only other recommendation I would make is there is actually a bedroom available in a two-bedroom apartment in Nashville, Tennessee. Not right at this moment, but come about December or January, if you act fast. And it's some really cool people living in the other bedroom, people that would be in support of the same kind of things you're thinking about.
Online Twister games. And
yeah, I was more talking about the simple living and stuff. Sorry.
Right,
we do hash browns.
I'd be interested in that if you want to send me some information.
All right. Yeah, I'll send out a brochure. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed this. And we will talk to you later.
All right, bro. Much love.
Okay. Are you really gonna hang up now?
Am I not supposed to?
No, you're supposed to give the outro music.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry.